Welcome to Chapter 3, which is about the present active indicative verb. Now that we've mastered the alphabet, the vowels and the diphthongs, the accents, how to break up things into syllables, and also seen a little bit of the English grammar, reviewing our verbs, our nouns, our adjectives, adverbs, and prepositions, now it's time to jump in with some action, the present active indicative verbs. Because it's our first foray into the verbs, we'll kind of introduce the whole verbal system. You don't need to master that at this point, but basically it'll give you the overview of how the verbs work throughout the Greek language. And then we'll just focus on, and what you'll really need to focus on today, is the present active indicative verb. So we'll look at what present tense is as opposed to past tense and future tense in terms of the tense structure. We'll also look at the active voice versus the middle and the passive voices. And then we'll introduce the structure of the indicative mood as opposed to the imperative or the subjunctive and the optative. And so basically what we'll be doing is looking at the whole structure of the verb, giving you an overview, and then focusing on the present active indicative verb. And that's the one you should really focus on for this chapter. But it's good to have the overview in mind as well, just so you can know how the part fits into the whole. Perhaps the easiest way to introduce the present active indicative verb is to focus on the present tense and what that means. Often people equate time and tense. So, for example, if we just lay it out in English, the present tense can be illustrated by something like this. Zach plays, present tense, basketball. That is, he plays basketball at the present time. The past tense is contrasted to that. So Zach played basketball, that is, he did it in the past. Zach played basketball. The future also contrasts with the present. Zach will play basketball. He hasn't already, but he will play basketball. And then finally, the perfect tense. Zach had played basketball. He had done something in the past, and it's completed and finished. The results are in the present. Now, this is a traditional way of expressing present tense. That is the equation of tense and time. In fact, tense rarely equals time this simplistically without some other markers, adverbs and prepositions and things to tell you what time it is. But it's a good place to start, so get these categories clearly in mind, and then we'll see what other options are available. Now let's get on to the voice. Basically, there are three voices in Greek. The active voice is when the subject does the action of the verb. So, for example, Elliot, the subject, hit the ball. Elliot, the subject, does the action of the verb. Elliot hits. In Greek, we've got a middle voice, which emphasizes the subject's doing or participating in the action of the verb itself. This can be expressed in several ways. Elliot hit himself in kind of a reflexive way, where he hits himself, so the action of the verb comes back to the subject, who initiates the action of the verb. Or something like, Elliot, he agreed. The emphasis here is on Elliot and his participation in the verb, that is, his agreeing. And so there are various ways to express the middle, but the point of the middle is to express the subject's participation in the action of the verb itself. Thirdly, there's the passive voice. And this is very similar to what we have in English. The subject receives the action of the verb. Elliot was hit by the ball. Elliot is receiving the action. He was hit by the ball. So there are basically then these three voices that we've got to keep track of: the active voice, the middle voice, and the passive voice. And they will tell us how the subject interacts with the action of the verb. Next, we talk about the verb's mood. There are basically four moods that a verb has in Greek. There's the indicative mood, which is basically a statement of the reality that is shared by the author to the readers of the account. Now, actually, it's not just a flat statement of reality, because liars often use the indicative, and so it does not tell you a simple statement of fact, but it's a portrayal of reality that is shared from the author to the reader. So, for example, the simple statement, he stood, he laughed, he went to the store, those kind of statements. The subjunctive mood is a mood of desire or possibility. So it's often translated, he may stand, or would you stand? Statement of possibility or desire, the subjunctive mood. The imperative is usually portrayed as a command mode. Stand up, pick up the milk, where the subject is being commanded to do something. When the imperative is used to a superior, it is usually in the form of a polite request instead of a command. The optative is similar to the subjunctive, only more in the category of a wish. The level of possibility is higher here. Now, these optatives are rare in the New Testament, and so we're not going to make a big deal about them, but statements like, oh, that he would stand, where there's a statement of a wish or desire. So the moods, the four moods in Greek, are then the indicative, and that's what we're studying, the present active indicative. Later on, we'll learn about the subjunctive, the imperative, and a little bit about the optative, or the wish mood. And I'll bet you wish that the Greek didn't have so many moods, voices, and tenses. All right, let's finally dig into this present active indicative verb. We're going to take it as the present tense, action occurring in the present. But remember, the tense time thing is a rather loose connection. For now, we'll simply translate the present tense, I speak Greek, normal translation mode for us at this point. Or, in a durative way, I am speaking Greek. Okay, so I speak Greek, or I am speaking Greek. Two ways to translate the present tense for now. Hey, it's not so hard after all, is it? Let's get a little personal with our verbs now. The verbs in many languages come with three persons. The first person, which is an I or we first person, so for example, I saw or we saw. And then the second person, which is a you or you all, taking a southern reading of this. The King James Version uses thou for the you singular and ye for the second plural, but in modern English we just use you for both, the singular and the plural. And then there's the third person, singular and plural. So he, she, it saw, or they saw. So there's a first person, I, we, second person, you, or you plural. In English, we translate them both yous. And then the third person, singular, he, she, it, depending on whether it's masculine, feminine, or neuter. And then the plural for all of them is they. So these are the three persons of the verb. All right, here's how you actually build a present tense form verb. First of all, there's a present stem. In this case, it's lu. Then you add to the present stem a primary pronominal ending. In this case, it's
omen.
The pronominal ending will indicate whether it's first person, second person, or third person. And so there's a stem plus a primary pronominal ending. These primary endings will be the same for the present tense as also in the future tense forms. And so it's kind of nice, you learn them once, you got them for both. Here is the paradigm for the present active indicative of luo. This is the paradigm that we've been working up to for this whole chapter. Luo means I loose or I am loosing. Luace is the second person, means you loose or you are loosing, you being singular. Lue means he, she, it, depending on whether it's masculine, feminine, or neuter, looses, or he, she, it is loosing. Now over on the plural side, the first person plural is
luomen.
We loose or we are loosing. The second person plural is luete. You all loose or y'all are loosing, meaning you plural, oftentimes just simply translated you. You loose or you are loosing, but know that it's the plural you. And then the third person plural is luusi, which means they loose or they are loosing. This is the present active indicative paradigm for the verb luo, which is going to be our base form that we're going to work off of largely for all our verbs. Over the course of learning Greek, we've boiled it down to about 21 chants that are learned in first year Greek that give you the basics of much of the morphology or the forms and structures of the language for your first year. So this is our first chant. Now you'll notice that we switch the accent mark over to the ending when we pronounce it, because we're wanting to stress the endings that are on luo, because these primary endings will be put on many of the verbs that we run into. So here's our first chant. You need to learn this to be able to chant through this in your sleep and just get this down so you can do it without even thinking about it. Okay, here goes. Our first chant. Luo, luais, lue.
Luomen.
Luete, luusi. And it means I loose, you loose, he, she, it looses, we loose, you loose, plural, and they loose. Once again, our first chant. Luo, luais, lue.
Luomen.
Luete, luusi. And say it with me this third time. Luo, luais, lue.
Luomen.
Luete, luusi. Congratulations on your first chant out of 21 in Greek. Now in the present tense form, the primary pronominal endings, which will be added to many verbs in other contexts, and also these same endings will be used in the future, are the first person singular is o, second person singular is ace, third person singular is a. So if you want to say I see blepo, and if you wanted to say you see, you'd say blepace. And if you wanted to say he, she, it sees, you'd say blepe. The plural form, first person plural, is amen. And that ending is added on to a verb. If you wanted to say we see, you'd say
blepomen.
And if you want to say a second person plural, you, plural, y'all, you would say blepete. And a third person plural, you'd say, you'd take the ending usi and put that on the end of the verb that you're using. So it'd be blepusi. And so these endings are called the primary endings, and they will be, these primary pronominal endings will be added to the verbs that you work with. The movable nu is added sometimes at the end of a word that ends in a sigma iota or an epsilon, especially when that sigma iota or epsilon is followed by a word that begins with a vowel or the word itself ends a sentence. The movable nu makes no difference in translation, but you should be aware of why it appears and why it disappears. And so keep your eye on this nu that appears and disappears when the third person plural pronominal suffix is added. Luusi becomes luusin. In order to check your understanding of a verb, a professor may ask you to parse the verb. The following format can be used to parse the verb. Instead of writing out present, active, indicative each time, just simply abbreviate it to PAI for present, active, indicative. The first singular is the first person singular, I, or if you're saying third person plural, it would be they. So here's the actual format that you'll use down at the bottom here. Luo is parsed PAI 1 SG or singular from Luo, that's where you give the root form of the verb, meaning I loose, where you actually translate the form that you're parsing. This parsing format will be used extensively in the workbook and will drill you so that you can use and readily evaluate the form of various verbs. Some students call it parsing purgatory, but I prefer the parsing party format. Finally, our third vocabulary list. The first word is Allah. And it means but or yet. Butt heads like that, it's got to hurt. The second word is
apostolos.
And it means apostle or sent one, an ambassador. The third word is the verb blepo, which means I see. The fourth word is gar. It means for or then. The fifth word is the verb
ginosko,
and it means I know. The sixth word is Jesus, and it means Jesus. The seventh word is lambano. Whoa, better get out of the way of that big feller. And it means I take or receive. Our eighth word is our favorite word, luo. I loose or destroy. Our ninth word is
Uranos,
and it means heaven. Hey, buddy, how about some wings for me? Our tenth word is the verb pistuo, which means I believe.